going to give us a real opportunity to do some communication with the total neighborhood at one time, rather than me working with each one individually. I will also continue to do some exploration on the concept of developing senior centers, working with the two or three senior centers that we have in the community right now about them enhancing what they're doing. And if a model can be created, maybe then we can create some other senior centers someplace else.
Okay. Communication. Marjorie, I just want to say one more time, the article in the Reflector was marvelous.
Thank you. I think I would be remiss if I did not attribute part of that doing to staff, Colette and Jackie.
That's great.
They do a lot of work behind this, always.
Do you have anything for...
No, I think from our previous meeting, I had to walk all over and play about wordless campaign.
Okay. Treasurer, John?
We've got a bank account that's we've got open now. We have $2,889.33 in it.
Man, we're loaded.
Yes, loaded. Okay. So I understand the $1,000 of that is designated for time banking, and as the time banking project moves along, that money will be spent as a sponsorship.
We're going broke. Okay, time banking committee update. Karen?
All right. Things are getting exciting when it comes to time banking. We've been talking about time banking for 2.5 years now, and we are just about to roll this puppy out. So, to start off, we have signed a contract with High Five Media, and they are the people that are doing our logo, our web design, and all of that good stuff. And what's fun about that is that they're working for both cash and time bank hours. So it saves us, we get a lot done, and it saves us a good deal of money when we can do a swap for time bank hours. We're happy to do that, and they're happy to do that for us. We had a meeting with Judy Bailey, who is the City of Vancouver Office of Neighborhoods, last week, and she is being a huge help in helping us with the rolling this out. We have a beta area in which we're going to begin, and that beta area is going to take the neighborhoods of the Northwest, Lincoln, Carter Park, Shumway, Hope, Arnada, Esther Short, and Fruit Valley.
Wow.
So that's basically the area that is west of
I-5.
And we're using that as our beta site for our rollout. In that regard, she sent out an email to all of the neighborhood associations for us, and that went out late last week. And as a result of that email, we have now four of the neighborhoods on our calendar to speak to.
Now, these are city neighborhoods. You're also dealing with county neighborhoods?
These are all, I believe, within the city of Vancouver. And so things are moving, and we're getting really, really, really excited. Our next time banking meeting will be Thursday of this week.
When's your launch date?
We would like to launch May. Just started, as I said, getting the word out late last week, so we have a lot of work in that regard ahead of us, but we're really excited to finally see this come to fruition. So that's the word on time banking.
Okay, thank you. Patty, do you have something on mental health?
Not this month.
Not this month?
No.
Okay. Lisa, on the senior award?
Not this month.
Not this month. And Chuck is not here. So I know that I can, speaking on his behalf, I know that he's doing a number of things in relationship to housing as we speak, meeting with builders, and in fact, he is doing helping in a class in PCC. He just finished that on Monday, and would like to see such a thing get into Clark or WSUV to work with accessible housing in a student application. Okay, gone through these, which gives more time for the main event for today, and that is the Area Agency on Aging and Disability of Southwest Washington. And David Kelly, the executive director here, is with us, and we really look forward to this because they do so many incredible things in our community, especially in relationship to aging and disabilities, but especially in relationship to aging. So David, you're on.
Well, great. It's a thrill to be here, and we're happy to be here. And I mentioned my last name is Kelly, and I, you know, I just got to say,
today's the day.
Aaron Gobrah, you know, happy St. Pat's Day. So I do that with pride, and with equal pride, I'm grateful to introduce some staff that's here with us, Christina Marineris, Mike Reardon, and Samantha Wahlbauer, who you will be hearing from as we explain our agency. So we understood the task here was to explain the Area Agency on Aging and who we are and what we do, and we're thrilled to do that. We would look forward to your questions. We think we have about a half hour presentation here, give or take, and then we would welcome questions and welcome input. We're just happy to be here. Commission on Aging is a powerful group in Washington State and certainly here in Clark County. But as it has been created and has past county commissioners and current county commissioners have sustained this, we applaud it. We're thrilled with the idea that we have such a select group here in Clark County. I'm also very happy to be in the presence again with Colette and Jackie, and I don't see Oliver here, but these are great staff people that we have great admiration for and are really thrilled to know them and associate with them. So we'll see the slides up above there, but the origins of Area Agencies on Aging were created in the 1960s at the same type of time period that created the Medicare, Medicaid acts of the Great Society under President Johnson, Lyndon Johnson. It is not well known, but it is true that there is an Area Agency on Aging in every county in the United States. That is a important fact, and we're one of them. Now, in that enabling legislation, some of the rules that created the Area Agencies on Aging said, one of the rules was that it had to be in a community that had 100,000 population. And in 1960, you had to put a few people together in Southwest Washington, so five counties banded together. Now, Seattle, in Washington State, Seattle, King County, Pierce County, and Snohomish County are counties that have a singular Area Agency on Aging. But the rest of us, there's 13 in total, including two tribes, that have Area Agencies on Aging in Washington State, and the rest of us are multi-regional district, a regional district. It's important you can always contact an Area Agency on Aging by going to www.eldercare.gov, and we'll give that at the end of our presentation as well. So we're made up of the Older Americans Act that created, was the enabling initial legislation that created this vast array of services, and we'll explain those services more in depth as we go along. But in Washington State, there's a second component to the Area Agencies on Aging that was created about 30 years ago, where some courageous women and men that had great ideas that were these bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., in Olympia, partnered with bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., and did a Medicaid diversion program. It was one of the first in the state, in the United States, and was highly successful sponsored by Washington State and that other Washington. This Medicaid diversion program, that we call it Title 19 Services. It's a program where Washington State was one of the first. A gentleman by the name of Charlie Reed and Penny Black, who was actually the first interim director of this agency, were critical in starting that program that really allowed the diversion of Medicaid dollars to go from funding nursing homes predominantly for the elderly to having a sponsored program that had people stay in their homes safe and happy and fulfilled in their homes. So those are our two main cost center programs, the Older American Act programs and Title 19. Now, as I said, the Area Agency on Aging for Southwest Washington, a lot of people know it by our former snappy nickname of SWAD. We changed that a while back to have it be the Area Agency on Aging, and we did that to make sure that we got people that typed us in on the internet. It came up at aging, and our services were there initially. Before, they would type it up and we'd be down in the 100th place under Southwest Washington, so we changed our name. We are a regional government agency. We are classified as equal to a local government agency. So we have, that means that we have all the things that government agencies have. Our direct oversight, policy oversight, are one commissioner from each of our five counties. So that's who becomes my board that we have the honor of reporting to. And the county commissioners' names are up there. Our current chair is the Skamania County Chair, Commissioner Chris Braun, and our Clark County Commissioner is Commissioner David Mador.
Is this on?
What do I do?
Oh, there we go.
An important role also in the Area Agency on Aging is our advisory council. This advisory council is made up of 18 members, six of which are from Clark County, and I'd just like to read their names. Elizabeth Brown, Carl Cheka, Sherry Van Dinter, Diane Hadley, and Shanti Potts. I'd like to acknowledge Karen Wolt as well. She has served on our advisory council for a number of years and currently, as a community member at large, attends our meetings, as well as Bob Holdridge. He has been attending recently as well, so we want to thank you for your contributions. The advisory council is a really important role in our organization. It does advocacy, not only kind of up the chain of command to the legislators. We just finished a senior lobby day where we met with each of the legislators from our many districts in Southwest Washington, as well as they're kind of the eyes and the ears in the counties that they represent to give us feedback about what programs and services are important, what are some emerging programs that we need to consider and consider developing. So they really play an important role. It's all voluntary. We really, really appreciate all their contributions.
So, am I on? Is this on? My voice carries so much.
I hit the button. Is it?
Okay. All right. My voice carries well. My wife's a beautiful singer, and I can't sing a lick. So she says I got great projection, which was unused. I also want to say that another member of our advisory council was Lisa Rasmussen. She served for several years on our advisory council, so that was a great deal there. So Aging and Long-Term Services is our parent organization at the state level. So whereas we report locally to county commissioners, we also have a dotted line to two agencies and within Washington State. One is the Aging and Long-Term Services Support Division of Washington State's DSHS, Department of Social and Health Services. And another group that we report to is the Healthcare Administration. So we get the honor of being able to keep two groups straight. And it would take too long to explain why those two are now in our path, but I will say that Washington State receives a lot of accolades regarding our overall, the overall system that is in place to do these two main programs within the state. We are traditionally ranked, and this bothers some, but I'm incredibly proud of it. We're traditionally ranked second in terms of outcome. All the outcomes you could possibly list by AARP, and then MetLife is an insurance company that does a lot of outcome-based analysis, and so does a great place, University of California, Davis. They do outcomes, and we're always rated one, two, or three in all the outcome-based programs that say how well are you doing delivering services to the aging population and the disability population. Now, the interesting thing is we're also rated 34th on the hit parade of cost. That's pretty simple math in my view. We're the best in the nation. How could you be the second best and the 34th most costly and not be the best in the nation? Minnesota is rated the highest often. They're also the ones that spend the most. So we discount Minnesota. Not really. We like Minnesota. We get a lot of ideas from them. And the rest of the nation has gotten a lot of ideas from Washington State. So our vision of AdSwell, that's our new non-SWAD name. We'll still respond if you call us SWAD. But our mission of AdSwell is that we want every adult, every older adult, adult living with a disability and their families to have access to information, programs, and services to help them thrive in the setting of their choice. Everything we do, we look at and we say, we're a social service organization. We provide services to our citizenry. And everything we do, we say, are we matching our vision as we enter into that process of being involved? We say, is it matching our mission? And therefore, our desired outcomes is to promote independence, choice, well-being, and dignity for our populations that we serve. We have 30 plus years of operating across a broad range of community-based services. Now, who we are locally, 7 years ago almost, when I started with the agency, we had about 66 employees. We now are a group that has 120 employees. And that's all based on service delivery. That's all based on need. So you can imagine the boom that is called sometimes the baby boom. And all of us baby boomers are populating a huge group that are in need of services. So once again, we serve that aging population. Every day, 10,000 people in America turn 60. So happy birthday to 10,000 people. And we also serve those 18 and older that are living with a disability. Okay, that's our population base. We manage and assure 108 contracts, subcontracts. One of our greatest subcontractors is here, Meals on Wheels. And when we talk about our specific programs, we'll talk more about that. Our operating budget is about $12 million. We do planning and advocating for Southwest Washington seniors, adults living with disabilities, and family caregivers. We've received some awards, national awards that are of meaning to those that delivered them. We hang those up and say we need to prove ourselves every day to try to make sure that we're still doing the national award caliber of service. We will now go and transition to trying to explain our programs in a little bit more depth, to give you a picture of what we do and those actual services that we provide. Our first one that we're going to emphasize goes back to that Title 19, Medicaid case management, And I'm especially proud to introduce Samantha Wallbauer, who's the director of that program.
Well, my voice doesn't carry quite as far as Dave's, so I will try and speak up here. Okay, so as Dave said, Title 19 or Medicaid case management is one of our larger programs. We case manage approximately 3,800 clients in our agency. Case managers authorize $5.9 million worth of services every month that allow these clients to remain safely in their own homes. This $5.9 million of service authorizations are funneled to our local economy by way of paying contracted providers for caregiving and other essential services that they provide to our clients. So some pretty amazing numbers for the work that's done for our folks in the community. These 3,800 clients that we serve would otherwise be receiving their care in a nursing facility. They all need that level of care. So instead of being in a skilled nursing facility for their care, they are able to choose to remain in their own home and receive the support that they need by caregivers and other essential services to be able to remain there. So this is a little graph here that demonstrates since 1992 to 2015 approximately the changes in our landscape of those folks that receive what I just spoke about, those folks receiving their care in the nursing facility versus in a community-based setting, whether it's in-home or in a residential setting. Since 1992, Washington State has been a leader in community-based long-term care services. Almost 20,000 people in 1992 in the state were receiving their care in a nursing facility versus a community-based setting. Almost 20 years later, the state has continued to reduce the number of people receiving care in a SNF while the need for those services has steadily increased. Now approximately 10,000 people receive their care in a nursing facility versus a community-based setting. You can see the difference, 53% in 1992 received services in their community in the home versus today almost 84% are choosing to receive their services in home. So what this has done over the years is helped to rebalance the system in Washington State for those folks receiving long-term services and supports, reducing the costs spent in skilled nursing facilities and delivering those services in the community instead. State continues to successfully rebalance the system, decreasing nursing facility placement from 82% to 38%, and increasing the in-home and community-based services from 16% to 48%.
So as we take a look at this marvelous program, you can imagine why those folks that I mentioned earlier, Charlie Reed, Penny Black, and other champions, Kathy Ledge, other champions that have this great idea, people are happier and healthier and more fulfilled as they stay in their home. An interesting statistic is that's been evaluated over and over again. What is your highest desire? Said to the aging, and topping living longer is living at home. And that then associates being with loved ones longer and being able to do that. So that's pretty cool. And another interesting sidelight to this is the cost savings that goes on. The cost to have somebody in a nursing home today is somewhere between, on Medicaid services, is somewhere between, it's north of $6,000 at the very least, and up to $9,000 a month. The cost of what we do for services rendered to all of our clients in the Title 19 program, including all the allocation of dollars that gets pumped back into our local community, that $5.9 million, the cost of that to the taxpayer of the state of Washington averages about $2,400 a month. So if you want to do the math, you can do the math. But if you want to see its impact, that means it saved $2.7 billion at least in the mathematics of what has been saved since the inauguration of the system. And there's a number that's right around $350 to $400 million a year that is at least, or the minimum, that is saved in Washington State as that program, as this program is administered. So we're quite proud of participating in it, and thrilled to have that be a part of who we are.
So in general, Medicaid case management, our success is not only seen in dollars, but it's seen in the experience that our clients have. Just as David was expressing, clients want to be in their homes. They want to receive their care in their home. They don't want to go somewhere else. You know, we have a lot of great examples. One example that comes to my mind is many of our clients have incontinence concerns and are bed fast or chair fast. They've not had assistance with some personal care tasks essential to that care, such as bathing and or toileting. They now have a caregiver that can help them with those tasks. This in turn has improved their skin condition, reducing their visits to the doctor and emergency room visits to address things like pressure sores. So all in all, just improves their experience with their physicians, with their healthcare network, and caregivers at home.
So that's our Title 19 case management program. That's one of the two major cost centers of what we do in our ADSWA agency. Our second group is the community-based programs, and I'm very proud to introduce both Mike Reardon, who's the director of the community-based programs, and Christina Marineris, who works in the community-based programs extensively. So Mike and Christina.
So as you can see up there on the board, we're just going to highlight a couple of the programs. In 2014, through our agency and through our subcontract, not only with the Meals on Wheels people, but with like Skamania County Senior Services, Clickatat County Senior Services, and Lower Columbia CAP, which serves Kalispell and Pattigan counties, we delivered roughly 219,000 meals to either a homebound senior or in a congregate meal site, or some folks think of as community meal sites. So that's quite a good number of meals. In 2014, through our Family Caregiver Support Program, we provided 26,000 hours of respite to unpaid family caregivers. The unpaid family caregiver is really the backbone of the caregiving that goes on across the nation, particularly, you know, here in Clark County as well. These are the folks who do it day in and day out, do not get paid. That's a spouse, husband, wife, could be a son or a daughter. And we are able to come alongside them and offer them a break. Sometimes 15, sometimes 20 hours a month, sometimes more, so that they can go out and run some errands, get their hair done, maybe just go out for a cup of coffee to reduce their stress burden. So, and then through our senior transportation program, we subcontract locally with Catholic Community Services as well as Safety One Specialty Transport. And throughout our five county area in 2014, we provided a little over 24,000 one-way trips. So that's a lot of trips. So we're taking folks primarily to healthcare appointments to see their primary care physician. Dialysis could be chemotherapy, could be radiation. The primary, the bulk of the transportation rides are to healthcare appointments.
I'm going to mention it's the Human Services Council that we work with.
Yeah.
Okay. Want to mention it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, can I get back to it?
Sure.
Okay. So last year we answered approximately 9,700.
Apparently my voice doesn't carry as well as Davis. So we answered approximately 9,700 calls for information and assistance. The beauty of this program is when you call in, it is a live person. It is a live person who is very familiar with the local area. You're not being directed to a call center. And these specialists are really well equipped to understand, listen to what the concerns are of the caller, and get them directed to the appropriate resources. You'll see up there one of the quotes that we had from one of our clients is within 20 minutes, we had more information than we had after weeks of searching for solutions on our own. And that's because this is what these folks do all day long. They're really experts about what is available in the community in terms of resources. And then in addition to that, we resolved 322 complaints and provided 4,512 volunteer hours through our long-term care ombudsman program. And again, this is just an exceptional program. It's volunteer-based, And it's really intended to support and advocate for those residents who are in long-term care facilities. So it's just an amazing program that's offered through the agency. In addition to that, we also offer the Gatekeeper program, and it's really intended to be a training opportunity for volunteers who would like to help with assuring that seniors remain safe in their home.
If you could go back a couple slides to transportation, what I also wanted to mention was what is not included in there is the number of rides that are provided through Medicaid transportation brokerage to the Human Services Council. As Samantha was talking through the Medicaid case management, the case managers, I believe, are in constant contact with those folks at the Human Services Council as well as their clients. To give rise to Medicaid appointments. So I want to acknowledge Colleen and her work with Human Services Council to provide those rights to Medicaid clients to their health care providers as well. So, thank you, Colleen.
And so the next slide is really reflective of one of the things I love doing most in my work, and that's the partnerships that we have in the community as we build out what is called an ADRN, or an Aging and Disability Resource Network. This is a federal initiative that you'll see AAA moving towards, and it's really intended to provide the right amount of information and support to individuals at the right time. And you'll see that partnerships are really critical in developing an effective ADRN, and you'll see programs such as, or agencies such as, the Commission on Aging, the Elder Justice Center, Health and Living Collaborative, and Regional Healthcare Alliance are all critical players in that partnership. And really have a philosophy that if we work together, if we collaborate, we can be much more effective and offer much more robust support to the community.
So, okay. So in those partnerships, we listed some of the agencies that we do, that we have partnerships with. We're thrilled to participate with individuals that have great ideas. Our clients, our people that we serve, our advisory council, great other groups that are formed in this community, like the group SWEEP that does work with helping to prevent elder abuse, groups like the Friends of the Elder Justice Center. Anybody and everybody that advances the cause of aging and those adults living with disabilities, we desire to partner with. We want to do that. We're a social service agency that primarily leads with the idea of delivering quality services through quality employees to our citizens. But in addition to that, we very much want to be firm advocates and firm good partners with those that we serve. Another partner that might come to mind would be, we're working very hard with Washington State University Vancouver campus to do some really great things with their director of gerontology there, Corey Balkin. I was just so thrilled. Corey just got her appointment as an intern to receive her tenure at WSU Vancouver, and it's really quite thrilling. So I keep wanting to call her Dr. Corey Balkin. But we're really thrilled to do that. The Vancouver Housing Authority, CTRAN, all these great agencies, Southwest Washington and Clark County in specific, is just blessed with so many great organizations that provide services to our citizenry, and where they provide services to those aging 18 and older with a disability or those aging, we want to partner with them. And I could go on and on with the agencies that are here in Southwest Washington. But another emerging opportunity for us that's really quite thrilling, and at one point in time was quite threatening, to be very candid, as healthcare reform came into play in Washington State, No one is going to ever take over, as far as I can tell, the essence of the programs that are sponsored by the Older Americans Act. Those are deeply embedded in America's culture and deeply embedded in the agencies on aging that, as I said, were spread throughout the nation. But healthcare and what we do in the area of long-term care services that is embedded in the Title 19 programs, those programs are going to be a part of and connected to healthcare reform. And there is nothing in America, I'll go out on a limb and say there's nothing in America that we need to reform more, maybe somebody could argue, but healthcare from the public policy point of view just has to be reformed. The spiking numbers of the aging population is well known. And that spiking number comes to Medicare with vengeance as it pertains to the fiscal costs that are faced by this nation as a whole. So healthcare reform, in however format it takes, is going to be a part of tremendous change. And long-term care in Washington State has been earmarked as a part of that long-term care. Long-term care has been earmarked to be a subset of healthcare change. And so we find ourselves smack dab in the middle of facing healthcare reform as an agency, both in terms of how we represent our clients that are receiving, our current client base that are receiving healthcare issues, healthcare, as well as the population in general that we have developed over 30 years of being highly effective community-based case managers for the complex lives that our clients currently live in. And in healthcare reform, this isn't a forum about healthcare reform, but since we have some extra time here, I will just indicate that long-term care is a huge component of healthcare, right? And it's a huge component of healthcare in terms of every facet that you could think of about healthcare issues. People receive services at wonderful hospitals and clinics, but they deal with those received services in the confines of their residence and in the confines of their locale where they live, right? And we're experts at working with people who are in their home. And so as we participate in that, Washington State has defined healthcare reform as to transfer a lot of that responsibility to a group of the health plans that are coming in and will be the private sector layer of healthcare reform in Washington State. Now, that may include and will include, as it stands right now, by the year 2020, all of the long-term care services that we provide to the population. Now, our objective is to make sure that service level of delivery of service to our clients that receive long-term care case management services, our objective is to make sure that those services are delivered with the same kind of skill and the same kind of care that our clients receive as we do that. We're not perfect at it, but by golly, we're the best around at doing long-term care services to the Medicaid population for services in their home. So we have this thought out there. By 2020, long-term care services may in fact be folded into the per cap or the for payment purposes, the per cap delivery of services through health plans that are competing in Washington State to offer those services. Now I will admit here, for several of the first 2 years, I I fought up against that. And colleagues are executive directors of agencies on aging throughout Washington State fought against that. We said, please carve out long-term care. We're the best in the nation. Carve out long-term care and put it as a separate item. Don't include it with the medical care and the mental health care and the alcohol and drug care that is going to be embedded in a service. We think we're good enough and we're efficient enough that we should be carved out. Several states did that. Wisconsin, Ohio did carve out long-term care. The Washington State leaders have kept long-term care in the formula for healthcare reform over my objection. Can you imagine that? I don't see how they could have possibly have done that, but they did. And there was a lot better people than me speaking to that. And our leaders at the Washington State level have their reasons. And the purpose of this meeting is not to describe that or discuss that necessarily. But I will say that we've determined that we will be partners with health plans. And we will do everything we can to make sure that we're a viable agency to, at the very least, teach how it should be done. One of the teaching mechanisms might be, the indicators of that might be, our case managers have a ratio of 90-1 of clients that they serve to one master's prepared case manager that does the services for them. That's a fabulously designed system and provides really quality work of that maintaining that 90-1. Some of our friends in the health plan world have numbers that are upwards of 300-1. We're not interested in that in Washington State, and thus we want to be partners with the health plans, teaching them how to do that. And oh, by the way, they could subcontract with us, and we'll keep doing that service. So to explain that just a little bit more, we'll have Samantha talk about that.
So as a part of creating our partnerships with these new providers in our area, the health plans, it is a new landscape for us. It is a new partner that we are learning how best to work with them, in order to show them and demonstrate to them how effective that we are in providing the community-based case management. It's different than telephone-based case management, calling your 300 clients once every 3 months. It's not the same design and may serve a purpose in the medical realm within physician clinics and to hospitals and such. But when you're talking about how a client takes, for example, those discharge plans when they've been released from the hospital, what happens to those pieces of paper? Not only what do they say and what are they supposed to do, they get home and it's now what? So those are the eyes and ears that are in the homes by our case managers. The long-term care services that we authorize in their care plans for those caregivers are based on the eyes and ears that we were able to provide in the homes. And so as we are educating our health plan partners, we are participating very successfully right now in the health home world with care coordination organizations. Our managed care partners or health plan partners are the health home leads in this particular area, and we provide care coordination services for all of them, and very successfully. Our care coordinators provide a different level of in-home care services to those clients, working with them on goal setting. So they are not the ones authorizing the care. Those are our Title 19 Medicaid case managers. Our care coordinators are actually helping them understand what those discharge papers are for. How do I get there? Do I need transportation? Once I get to the doctor, do I know where to go? Do I need somebody to interpret what the doctor is telling me for my 15 minutes in the room with that particular person? Have I told them my, two questions that I really need to get answered in my 15 minutes? Care coordinators are there to be advocates. They help with pretty much anything under the sun for that particular client that they serve in the home. with the goal being improving health outcomes for that person and reducing healthcare costs, accessing the right care at the right time. Do they need to go to the emergency room, or is it something they can schedule an urgent care visit? Should they call the nurse advice line? Our care coordinators are helping to triage that with folks in the moment. They have a lot of contact, monthly contact, with those clients. So the type of care coordination is really quite remarkable that is happening right now and really is having some amazing results. One of the examples that comes to my mind in terms of how clients have benefited from care coordination, which is different than I have an assessment for the case manager who says I can have 100 hours of caregiving services with a med reminder, let's say. That's our Title 19 Medicaid services, and case management does a great job there. Care coordination, on the other hand, works with the client's goals. There's a client in particular who had been hospitalized 4 times in the last 2 months. They lived in an assisted living facility, so we don't have to follow folks that are only in the home. This is another really cool feature. If they move from in-home to assisted living to nursing facility, our care coordinators can follow them wherever they go. In this particular situation, the assisted living facility could no longer provide the level of care that this particular person needed, but they refused to leave. They refused to go to the skilled nursing facility, which is really the level that they were at. The reason that they didn't want to go to the skilled nursing facility was because they wouldn't take her cat. So the care coordinator was able to help the client work with work within their support system, found a friend who was retiring. That particular friend agreed to move into the assisted living facility with her, provide the additional care that she needed, in addition to what the assisted living staff was providing, and allowed her to keep a cat. So kind of was a win-win-win for everybody in the particular situation, and since then has not been to the hospital. Additional care has been able to be provided. So it seems very simplistic in nature, but all of that to kind of thinking outside of the box, working in kind of a non-traditional setting in the community.
If I could just say, I don't think I set the table well enough about healthcare reform and its need. If you can imagine that, just that one little story there, if we prevent or divert somebody from going to the hospital 4 times, think of the cost savings. Multiply that over, that's the essence of healthcare reform, and that's the exciting part of this, is in Washington State, we are going to try our best to do these CCO type of work, this community-based case management, where we will work with clients who will then create a health action plan, and that health action plan will be followed more readily as they work with their CCO person. And we're doing that work, and multiply that issue. Sometimes the clients, the referrals that we receive, sometimes they're people who have visited the emergency room 300 times in a year. These are people who are costly and weighty on the Medicaid and Medicare systems. So we're interested in bending that cost curve. We also have another program that we work with.
So a couple years ago, we began a transitional care services program, and I just want to tell you a little bit about that. We partner right now with PeaceHealth Southwest. We have a staff member that goes there twice a week and does rounds and works with people who are getting ready to discharge. Now, why is that important? Because oftentimes when somebody gets ready to discharge, like Samantha said, they go home, they have these lists of do's and don'ts, doctor's appointments to follow up with, and they get overwhelmed and they don't know what to do, so oftentimes they just end up back in the emergency room. But through the transitional care program, we follow them for 30 days. We visit with them prior to their discharge. We do a home visit once they get home, and then we follow up with phone calls. And those visits go something like this. When's your next appointment? What are your red flags that you need to be paying attention to so you don't end up back in the hospital? The meds that they discharge you with, are they in line with what you currently take? Do we need to call the doctor, and do we need to reconcile those? Do you need a ride to your doctor's appointment? So very much this boots on the ground, how can we support the person so they don't end up back in the emergency room? So that's our transitional care service. In 2014, through Peace Health and a couple other referral sources, we had almost 600 referrals. We engage probably about 75% of those, and about 25 to 30% actually complete kind of a 30-day program. We use an evidence-based model, and that's a pretty good rate, a success rate of engaging and following folks and keeping them out of the hospital. In 2015, just for the first couple of months, we've received about 130 referrals. We have entered into a contract with Community Health Plans of Washington to provide transitional care services to their clients. And so it's really an important need. And if you follow the Affordable Care Act at all, that was really one of the drivers behind it, is to get people to not readmit because it gets so costly. And there are severe penalties applied by Medicare if a hospital has a high readmission rate. In addition to that, we have several evidence-based health and wellness programs. Christine and I were talking with Betty prior to the meeting, and we launched a evidence-based fitness program at the Battleground Community Center probably 5 years ago. And I remember consulting with Dave and say, Dave, you know, this is going to cost us a lot of money. We've checked out other models. We should charge a fee for them to come. We should charge like $5 every time they come. Dave says, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do it free. And you know what? Dave was absolutely right. We've been doing that for about 5 or 6 years now. Folks can contribute as they wish, or if they don't, they don't have to contribute. It's not dependent on their contribution. And that class is going tremendously well. We started a second program here in Vancouver at Trinity Lutheran Church. We're the same instructor. If you know her, Lori Porter, she is absolutely amazing. She checks up on folks who haven't been there for a couple weeks, and Betty was saying, it's its own community. It's almost like this is how it's supposed to work. Hey, Sally hasn't been here in 2 weeks. Oh, well, I know. She goes to Arizona or whatever. So there's just checking on people, so that's kind of really neat thing for her. We also have an evidence-based program, Aging Well with Chronic Conditions, Living Well with Chronic Conditions. That's a 6-week evidence-based program to help folks who have chronic conditions such as diabetes, learn to manage it so they can live successfully. So we're going to switch gears a little bit. Dave mentioned quite a few times we deliver services for social service agency. Another considerable part of our business is planning. And so in the back there were, I only need about 10 copies, of what's called our 2016-2019 Area Plan Survey. So as an area agency on aging, we are required to do a 4-year area plan. So in 2015, what we're doing now is we're gathering input through public forums such as this. We will be going to congregate meal sites, we'll be going to senior centers to gather input for people to fill out these surveys. They take about 10 minutes. We need to hear from you folks to tell us what's important to you. What programs do you think you need in your community? What do you need in order to stay home and live well? So these surveys are critically important, and I can make copies if needed. We will have a survey monthly. We can send out a link. But it's really, really critical that we get that information. So what do we do with that information? We bring it back. We analyze it. We meet with our advisory council. We meet with our COG board. We say, these are the issues. These are the programs and services that have risen to the top. How are we going to plan for those, and how are we going to carry those out the next 4 years? What funding do we need? How are we going to allocate our funding to do that? So it's really, really important that the public gets a chance to weigh in on that. It's really, really critical. And let me just put a case in point. It was about 3, maybe 4 years ago, I was talking with our information assistance specialist and say, so tell me about the calls that you get that there's an unmet need out there, that people call and say, we just don't have an answer. And it was dental care. For folks on Medicare, you know there is no dental care coverage. So over the last couple of years, we've been working to establish an oral health program here in Clark County, as well as in Calhoun County. Through Dave's approval and working with our board, we were able to allocate funding, so we can now provide oral health services to a number of seniors in Clark County as well as Calhoun County. And we are going to continue to grow that because we responded to a community need. So.
Well, we'll have, we're trying to speed up here to get so that we have at least 10 minutes for questions. Christine's going to finish up, but I'll say that area plan also then is shared with our partners. We anticipate, and this will be the first time that we'll have an opportunity to share what the area plan information that we've captured with our partners here in, at the Commission on Aging. That's pretty exciting. We'll be able to do that, and this will be an opportunity that will happen for us.
So you can see this is our contact information. You can contact us either via email, call us, and then also, usually when we do these presentations, somebody inevitably says, I have an aunt who lives in Spokane, do you have something somewhere there? And as Dave said earlier, these AAAs exist everywhere in the country, and we're always happy to either connect you by giving us a call or sending us an email, or you can go to the eldercare.gov website. All of the calls or emails that we receive are confidential, so just know that whatever issue that you're calling with stays between us and you. And also the beauty of this program is that it can be you who needs the service, it could be a family member, or perhaps I see a number of our partners in the audience tonight, and they know very well that they can call us and we will help connect them to resources for the clients that they are serving.
So with that, we tried to get that done in about a half an hour. We're an agency that does a lot of stuff. We're proud of what we do. We're extremely proud of our community and our ability to be a part of this community together. I can't tell you how proud I am that we have this Commission on Aging, that we have so many great organizations that really open their organization up to a closer look at how to help those aging people as well as those adults living with disabilities. We of course acknowledge all the youth that are living with disabilities, but that's a separate agency. The agency that deals with the disability under 18 is a separate agency than ourselves. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll open up with any questions you have of any of us. I think I saw a question hand up here over here.
Yeah, I have a couple questions. First of all, how is the public linked to your care coordinators? How does that happen? And are there restrictions to that
Right now, our care coordinator program is funded because of a client being eligible for Medicaid. And being Medicaid eligible financially is one factor, regardless of age. The second factor is how at risk they are of the cost on the system. So how much does the state predict that they're going to cost the system in their health care activity? And that has to do with this, with typically a chronic condition, either having a chronic condition or being at risk of having a chronic condition, and their cost on the system based on past claims data. So that's kind of a high level summary of how we get referred clients to approach to see if they are interested in participating in care coordination services. Care coordination services are voluntary. We get referrals through the Health Home Program for these identified folks by the state to participate in the services.
So your general public can't just call in?
General public absolutely can call in. Oftentimes folks have been referred but don't realize they've been referred. And calling in certainly would allow us an opportunity to review that. And we have an ability to make what's called a reverse referral, saying, hey, take a look at this particular person, would they be eligible? We have care coordinators I know who have helped folks, they're in a home and they end up helping a network of that person's support system access services, whether it's care coordination services and such that aren't connected yet.
But clearly, we are a targeted agency. I want to make sure that we, not all, but a bulk of our actual delivery of services pertain to those people within our community that are on Medicaid, that have that Medicaid situation. Now, the Family Caregiver Program is open to all. Our information and assistance is open to all without regard to the qualifier of income. But Medicaid is a program, just to state one of the obvious points, Medicaid is a program that is conditional upon income. It's conditional on the straits of which one is at. And often our seniors in our communities end up on that after a lifetime of paying taxes and doing all that they do, and they end up in the Medicaid arena just by happen chance.
So I have a question. When I sat on the council, everything was going on with health care and everyone was panicked, and I'm very sorry to hear that it went the way that it did. But is there a chance, because I know we have the Title $19, is there a way that when the conglomerates, that's what I'm gonna call them, start taking over, is that you can somehow contract and incorporate people on Medicare that are in that crack area? Because that's an area that we've been talking a lot about, that people fall through, whether it be transportation, they don't qualify for medical transportation, the housing, going to the hospital, that is a great service, but if, why, just because they're not on Medicaid, do they not get that, they still come back? And so I'm wondering if there's a way, because I don't want you to lose any of your case managers or anybody else.
Right. Well, I'll just answer that question because I'm the most braggadocious person here at this table, on this side of the table. I will say that, Lisa, that's a great question. We're absolutely confident that as we do our services, especially with the quality that we do them, and especially with the insights that 30 years of experience of working with the Medicaid population, we know that we will be the Cadillac program of delivering services to the Medicaid population. Now, there are many wonderful healthcare providers that provide services to not only the Medicaid population, but to the entire population. But as far as community-based case management, we will be and are the best group providing that service. And I mentioned that it was a threat to us as an agency. And I mentioned that we tried to have it carved out from Washington State. And if they would have anointed me king for a day, that would have happened. But it didn't happen. So what we're doing is that we have every intention that we will be the best partner with the private sector healthcare health plans that are in our communities. These are United. These are big Molina. These are multifaceted big companies that are coming into our communities. And they're chock full of wonderful people who are trying to do a great job, and we're going to show them that our delivery of services, not only will they run, but they'll run fast to contract with us. That's our plan. That's what we're going to do, and I'll keep bragging about it as long as I'm kicking here.
You could save them money, definitely.
We will. We do, and Samantha and her team are proving it, that we're saving money now. We have some of the highest rates of when you receive those clients in the CCO program. Many of those clients don't know they're being referred. They don't have a clue. So we're cold calling on those clients. And so are every other agency throughout the state that's working on it. But we're completing health action plans on an amazingly successful rate. We're doing it because we're pretty slick at it, and we're very skilled at what we do. And we're bending the cost curve by having active people actively involved in their health action plans. And we're doing that by far and away as well as any place in the state, private, public, any group. We're competing. We've decided we're going to compete for that book of business, because we know that the Medicaid population isn't tremendously skilled at being self-advocates. That's our motivation. Our motivation isn't to compete with the private sector or anything like that. Our motivations are that we know our client base. We know what they need, and we know that in Washington State, we've created one of the best long-term care systems. We think that should be continued, and by golly, we're going to work with our private sector partners to have them beg us to participate with them.
There was a question over here.
Yeah.
So you guys don't work with anybody that gets SSI, SSDI?
Yes, we do, actually.
You do?
Yeah, SSI would be considered Medicaid.
SSI, not SSDI.
Both. It depends on what program you're talking about. And Lisa, you spoke about those that are Medicare only and maybe not Medicaid yet or don't want to be accessing Medicaid services. You know, Mike and Christina work in transitional care with folks regardless of insurance. So right now that is they in community services, and if they wanted to speak to that, yes. The health plan contract with Community Health Plan of Washington is a little different in that regard, but we do work with the SSI and SSDI folks.
I'm here unfortunately representing a growing senior population in our homeless shelters.
Yep.
Right.
So I guess I'm wondering what if you guys are involved with trying to help us have more affordable housing, because that's kind of
well, Mike has something to say that was pertaining to your question, and then I'll respond to your comment.
Well, just I want to make clear, the transitional care services are open to anybody 18 years of age and older, so regardless of insurance. And then just I think back to your question, in addition to our public, our area plan public survey, we have a partner survey, and if you give me your card, I will send you a link to that, because this is exactly what we want to do. Is we want to hear from our partners, what are you seeing as needs in your community?
It's very difficult right now.
It's a huge problem. Our problems from our problems in the society are huge, of course, and our pledge as an agency that has targeted by mission and by vision to work with a particularly targeted population. Of course, we have those living with disabilities that are 18 and older, and we have those 60 and older that are homeless, and that we desire to partner as best we can in those areas. And so I serve on the committees for the Regional Healthcare Alliance. I'm on the steering committee for the Healthy Living Collaborative Group. I'm on that steering committee. I respond to any and all partnerships with our partners at the prosecutor's office. I sit with Patty on the Elder Justice Steering Committee. So we're really interested in partnering. We don't have all the answers at all, but we're wanting to be a part of the solutions to the best of our abilities.
What are some of the things that the commission might do to help and support you?
Well, first of all, the commission has already done that, bringing to light issues that are of concern. Now, you noticed that we didn't say that we're advocates to the county commissioners about zoning issues, about high quality issues that they have more control over. For instance, this whole arena of mental health and all these things. We're an agency that specializes in what we do. So the Commission on Aging, from my perspective, and we've had groups form in Skamania County and Cowlitz County and our counties, and we really applaud, and we can be fantastic cheerleaders for you. We love what you do. So we want to partner wherever we can. We want to influence wherever we can. But in areas where you would take the leadership, we know that we're oriented towards the programs that we serve. Now, we've gone out a little bit on a limb with this healthcare thing, but the state forced us, doggone it. And we're doing that because I mentioned it was a threat to us. To every threat is equal, what's a threat, but an opportunity. And so we're using that threat as an opportunity to know what we do. But where we are not involved directly, Bob, we're not involved in some of the great things that the Commission on Aging can choose to be involved in. There's great programs of neighbor to neighbor, doing programs that are important to share information and share things that Karen's working on. Those are great programs that we wouldn't do, that are not in our wheelhouse. So the Commission on Aging, it's kind of...
accessible housing, all those kinds of
right,
things.
Right, right. Influencing housing issues, influencing how builders build housing. We're not going to do... We're going to say, we want that to happen. We applaud it. We'll put on our cheerleader outfits, and I'm really a good cheerleader, and so are everybody here except for Mike. And we could be really good cheerleaders on that, and we want to sponsor that and work on those situations. I'm kidding. Mike would be good at it.
What do you do about the VA population? Because a lot of vets are on Medicaid, and a lot of vets are, how do you serve, or what do you not do if they end up, they don't have services, they're not over at the Portland VA or whatever, and you're in the hospital, or they go out, or they're in a home with other people. Does that affect you guys at all?
Sure, of course it affects us.
Does it disqualify them at all?
No, it doesn't disqualify anybody, and we serve many veterans, and we have many veterans that are within our cadre of nearly 4,000 clients. We have 4,000 case management clients. We have 2,000 CCO clients. We're affecting a lot of people, and veterans are a part of that. Now, there are specialty programs that are nationwide grants that are participating with things. I also sit on the National Board of Executive Directors of the Agencies on Aging, and I'm hearing about national programs that Agencies on Aging are looking at to partner especially with veterans. So we would love to participate with that. There's another question, yeah.
A couple of questions. First of all, I'm a private citizen, I'm not a social worker. When I asked for help, from your agency, it took a month or two to get a call back. And that's not a criticism. I know you don't have money, but it is a problem.
Well, sure, it's a problem. If we don't call back in a month, that's just a flat-out mistake. We shouldn't do that. I apologize.
I'm not criticizing anyone.
I am, so
okay.
Let's go ahead.
Second thing is, older people lose their hearing, their sight. And Medicare doesn't help. Is there any place that people who need those kinds of assistance?
I'll answer that from an editorial point of view about my opinion about healthcare reform. Healthcare reform just has to happen, because we're doing a lot of things with our dollars in the Medicare arena, especially Medicare. That's the golden trough of where people estimate between, I've seen as low as 40% and as high as 60 to 70% of our total healthcare dollars are spent on people in the last 6 to 8 months of their life. So there's something wrong with that formula. So we need to provide better services as a nation. We need to provide better preventative services that help people live their lives longer and not keep spending so much money on episodic interventions. We need to spend our precious taxpayer monies on more things like what you're talking about. And that's a national issue.
But those things aren't episodic.
Oh, no, I agree with you. The things that you listed are not episodic, but unfortunately, we as a society have fallen into this trap with healthcare of providing episodic events that cost a lot of money, and they've been unchecked. And so somehow, somewhere, we have to reform healthcare. And, I'm just a private citizen as it pertains to healthcare reform, so you can take my input for whatever it's worth. But from the perspective of an executive director of the Agency on Aging, I couldn't agree with you more. There's a need for more help to our Medicare populations for livability rather than episodic events that are perhaps questionable in their outcomes.
You should read Being Human.
Sure, I love to read.
Well, anyone who hasn't read that, it's a criticism of healthcare as it's
sure.
By doctors.
You have no complaint from me. Doctors, especially doctors in our community, do a lot.
Have you heard of that book?
Sure, I have. Okay. Absolutely. Any other questions?
I have one more thing, please.
Sure.
There were many, many rides listed when you were doing your presentation. If you were an old person, and it doesn't apply to me because I can drive and I get around, if you were an old person and you're stuck at home and you can't drive, it is not a thrill to be going to the doctor every month. Isn't there any opportunity for these people to get out? They can't even get to Marshall Center to get on a bus to go ride with the other people.
Do you want to respond, Mike? Do you want to?
Yes, there is, but not through you guys.
So, you bring up a very good point. I think what I would ask you to do is if we could have a dialogue afterwards through our senior transportation program. There may be some options available to you or to the folks you're talking about. But there are some limits, there are some eligibility, and there are some restrictions to some of the programs. And so I'll be honest with you, some folks just, they end up in that situation. Not that it's right, not that it's okay. Should we begin to address it? Yes. But if you and I can speak for a little bit afterwards,
Part of it's C-band, but Human Services Council has a program called
Speak to Mike.
Sponsor a ride, and it's for this population that falls through the crack. And I sit on the board for the Human Services Council, and it's something that we're taking on this year and going to be doing some major fundraising and things to start offering these people. Because if it's not medical and they haven't qualified for C-band and they can't walk to a bus because we don't have sidewalks to get them there, then they're stuck. And they don't even get to go to the grocery store and pick out what they want to eat for food. So it's, and the social component and going all of that. So sorry, Michael, but yeah.
No, that's really a point well made. We have the Human Services Council, both that agency and many other agencies, CTRAN, are trying to address serious problems in our community. We have the Regional Transportation Council that works hard on these issues, of which we want to be a partner. We're not a transportation agency.
So. Any other questions? One last question. Here we go.
Is there any place, anyone, anything that has gathered together all of the different services available, whether it be through Medicare related and eligible to non-Medicare and eligible related, so this is what you were just talking about, that one could access and say, here's from A to Z what's available.
Hang on.
We're in the process of doing that right now as you speak.
Yep, hang on.
Okay, so
that's coming.
Although I got a cheer, can you tell me, is this being created and you're going to do it?
It is. It is.
You wish it would happen and it's still in the evening.
We're talking about right now putting together a website that allows you to link everything that exists in Clark County on every subject, whether it's housing or it's health care or it's transportation or all of the links that exist. In fact, the guy who's helping us with that happens to be in the room at the moment and creating the website.
I find that very helpful. I was trying to find something a week or so ago for I'm in the neighborhood and one of my residents needed something on elder abuse. And it took me from Friday until Monday to be able to find somebody to contact on that. And I think that's a disgrace.
Yeah.
I should have been able to reach somebody on Friday and had somebody.
What David is saying is so important, and that is we have a number of incredibly good organizations in Clark County. Really do. They're fabulous. And this one happens to be the 900-pound gorilla. They do so much, so very much, with so little, comparatively speaking. And they are doing a yeoman's job. And I applaud them. They are doing a great, great work. But there are all kinds of things they don't deal with specifically. So you've got, where'd Greg go? I think he left. The Healthy Aging Alliance, for instance, that is centered on fall prevention.
Right.
And there are all kinds of things that people need to be able to access. And so what we're trying to do as the Commission on Aging, because we don't have, you know, we're not fighting this organization or that organization for grant monies or anything else. What we want to be able to do is enable people to understand, become aware of everything that exists out there so they can access what they need. And we realize most people don't use phone books. They just don't go there. And today, the phone book is already too old by the time it hits your driveway before you throw it away. And so that has to change. So we're on it. Bill, trust me, we are on it.
Bill, can I also offer an additional resource? So if you look at the website up there, www.helpingelders.org, if you go there, there's actually links to resource pages. And as we evolve, you heard us talk earlier about the Aging Disability Resource Network. There will actually be a consumer site, a public-facing site, that will let you access the same resources that we do. That's, you know, as Bill said, that they're building out there for also. But if you go to the website, there's a number of resources that you can find already posted there. And if you call us, we'll also help you walk through those resources as well.
You're welcome.
I just want to make one editorial comment. What you said is said often. And it's been my experience is because people don't need it until they need it, so they aren't aware of it. And so that's why we appreciate so much being able to come here and kind of spread our word, and we take advantage of any opportunity we can for a speaking engagement, because we know the story has to be repeated often, because you may get a business card, you may get a flyer, and it may end up in the back of your, you know, car. And it won't be 3 years down the road until you think, oh man, what was that agency that I needed? So I appreciate your comment. We're well aware of it. That's where we continue to, you know, can do outreach.
In a meeting that we had last week, David made such a good point, and that is that, and we all know this to be true, and that is people don't seem to want to look at something until it's right in front of them in a crisis. They aren't proactive, they're reactive, and we have to try to change that. Do whatever we can to change that. I mean, even a former mayor of the city didn't understand what they did, and David used to work with him. They had no idea what they did.
He actually gave me a really bad time. He said, why is this a best kept secret?
Yeah.
And so we're really grateful to have been here. We're grateful for our citizenry. We're a part of a fabric that's delivering a cadre of services. We're an agency that will try our best to do our best, knowing that sometimes we miss the mark, knowing sometimes that we aren't there, but together we'll improve, and our pledge is to try our best and continue to move forward.
Thank you, David. Let's give them a hand. And if you have questions, they'll be here for a few minutes afterwards. Our meeting is adjourned. Nope, one more thing.
No.
What
else do
we
need?
What? What do we need to approve it? Okay, open business. What do we got? COA member appointments for June.
Those reminders, I
think. Yeah. And we're going to nominate officers on May 19th. So there you go.
That's not the vote, that's what we nominate.
Yeah, nominate.
All right.
Okay.
Yes. I have one thing to say before we adjourn. Yes. And it's to the audience out there. I'm going to go way, way out on a limb here. You know, you reach an age and you find me, I'm not afraid to jump off that cliff. I talked earlier briefly about the time banking program, and I am in hopes that when we get this program off the ground, the concerns that this woman had over here will be addressed in some way by that time banking program. If you're someone that just needs someone to come in and visit with you for a while, or you need a ride to Loop Key, or you'd like a walking partner, or whatever the case may be, it's a neighbor-to-neighbor program that connects people to their immediate community that surrounds them. And it can go a long way to help in alleviating depression and the feeling of isolationism. So it's one thing to say a program is coming, it's another thing to get it implemented and working. I hope that all of you out there will look for it to come and will participate, because really it's a great way of reconnecting to the community. That
that you live in.
Good word, Karen. Thank you. We are adjourned. Thank you, guys.
It was fun.
Thank you.